Hallihallo.
Hello, Uva. How are you, my friend?
I'm good. We just got the write up in the Variety. I don't know if you
Oh.
saw it already about a run about the next production. And wait, I can send it to you over WhatsApp. And I just saw Matt moving forward with the translation and editing of my German book for the US readers.
Oh
What
yeah, you talked to Matt. Okay.
Yeah, so I basically did the translation and I went over it. And Matt will just, he edited it, you know, like he made it like some grammatical errors. And everything, and I sent him photos, so he will build kind of a master, and he says he has maybe one edit like book company who would then release the book. That would be perfect because I think a lot of US and Canadian readers or English speaking readers were never able to read my German speaking books. And I combined all three German books in that one book, what would come out into the US. And I updated it with all the news to First Shift, Hanau, all the stuff what is not in my German books. So, and now also Run, what we shoot in April in Croatia.
Yeah, no, Matt, I'm having dinner with him like on Sunday. Him and his wife, me and my fiance are having dinner with them at one of the Disney restaurants. So he's also coming to my wedding. So woohoo. But I'm very excited about this book coming out. It's going to be really great, guys. It's the first time, like Uwe said here, first time most American English speakers get to read his books that came out in Germany exclusively because they're in the German language.
Yeah, exactly. So, and no, I'm very happy about this. That would be very, very positive if this moves in the right direction. And so, but first up, what was this shooting at the in Kansas City? Like, what the fuck? Who did that? Who ran amok at a celebration for the Super Bowl winners?
Yeah, you know, it's pretty crazy. I mean, let's see, Kansas City Chiefs parade, the investigation continues. There was a rally shooting at the Union Station that left one woman dead and 22 others with gunshot wounds. So that means 22 others received bullets. Kansas City Chief Police Stacy Graves says that the three people were taken into custody afterwards. And everybody's scared. It was supposed to be a celebration. Mayor Quentin Lucas said Thursday that the investigation continues into the shooting and individuals who were taken into custody are being questioned. I'm surprised they're alive. Jeez. Da 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 da. Photos and video from the scene showed bystanders jumping in to tackle at least one of the suspects while police led another man away in handcuffs. Others jumped into action to try and help victims. Blah 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 blah. So a DJ died in the shooting, one of the DJs at the event.
But do they don't know who why they did it or
They're
who
not saying whatever they know. They have them in custody and they're talking to them, but whatever they know, they're not saying. I mean, it's so soon, it just happened. It says victims were transported to three different hospitals because there were so many victims. I bet the hospitals weren't prepared for that many gunshot wounds. The age range is between 6 to 15 years old of the victims. That's fucked up.
Yeah, kids, right? So,
Yeah, they're kids. That's fucking crazy. Officers immediately responded. They performed life-saving measures. So yeah, it sounds like they did everything they could. They didn't like it wasn't like that school shooting where they took a million hours to fucking get inside. Sounds like they moved pretty quickly, but still a lot of people got hurt. But like, fuck, the normalization of this kind of violence, like, it's getting out of fucking control. Like, people need to chill out, you know? Or like, if you're feeling angry or aggressive, you know, catch yourself and like seek therapy, get medicated. Like, you know, like, the world is hard. The world's a fucking hard place. And a lot of people are sick out there. And I don't know, all of this crazy like political division shit doesn't help anybody's mental health and various other factors in our society. It's just really shocking.
Yeah. And it's again, the availability of guns.
Yeah.
You know, like, I mean, when you see that they can just go through especially in states where you can carry a gun, where that is okay that you run around and carry a gun.
No, yeah.
You know, that is very bad, of course, because it makes you easier flip out. It makes you, like, let's say you're an emotional person and everything, and you have the gun in your car. The chance is way higher that a road rage situation or whatever escalates to violence, as you don't have it. And it's just that they don't get that when you see, like, the amount of people getting shot in America in comparison to any other country in the world, you know, is completely insane.
There's a lot of fucking George Floyds out there who want to police their neighborhoods and, like, protect their neighborhoods and shit like that. And they're, like, they take it to another level. They take it to extremes, that kind of shit. I know that people mean well, but when they're doing these things, trying to make things safer, but in reality, like, you're just exasperating the situation by... Like, when I was a kid, my mom told me, if someone's got a gun, get away. Assume that they're going to use the gun. Like, normalizing violence and normalizing, like, an eye for an eye and normalizing all these things that, you know, religious people stand against is hypocritical and dangerous. And fucking, you don't want to kill someone. Like, all these people who are all, like, have their guns on their triggers and then they accidentally shoot someone or on purpose shoot someone. Guys, if you've never seen a human being die, you don't want to see this and you don't want to experience that. It's not like in the fucking movies. It's fucking, it's horrible. It's a horrible thing. So don't fucking play with fire. It's like, you know, people think it's a fucking game. Like, when life is over, I hate to say it, you're not living in some fucking fairy tale where you're going on the steps to heaven and the clouds are there and your cats are there. Pretty much it's over. It's done. Your consciousness is done. Life should be valued. Life is precious. You know what I fucking mean? Like, it's like everybody's so selfish. All they care about is my needs, my guns, what I want, me, me, me. Think about fucking society. Think about the rest of society.
Instead of thinking about your guns, right? It's not, I'm not pro-destroying gun ownership. I'm just pro- lock it up, take it only out of the gun safe when you go to the shooting range. But guns to carry in public, to just have laying around, thousands of kids dying a year in America just because the gun is loaded on a shelf, in a closet.
They grab it. Look at that woman.
They're dead, right?
The mom was fucking put in jail for that kid. The kid shot all those people in the school. And for the first time, a law was enacted to hold the mother responsible for the child bringing the gun to school. She says that she, you know, did not everything in her power. But in reality, she bought the gun, took it to the shooting range, normalized the hand play with the gun, normalized the existence of the gun, like that playing with a gun is okay. And the kid had fucking mental problems.
Yeah, totally.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, fucking, it was horrible, 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 and not okay. And she was guilty, and it's correct that she goes to jail for it because it's absolutely insane how she handled it, what she did. So that should be in general, and kids should never have any guns. Under 21 should nobody should have a gun. So, but all of this is rhetoric. It's just we talk about it, but it's just have like no impact whatsoever. It's they continue down the road, as they continue down the road with a very old senile Biden against a very old crazy Trump. So, I mean, I watched Jon Stewart this week, and I think he did a great new show. He was back to the Daily Show. And I think he did a great opening comparing them both and telling them, basically, both, you're unfit of running the country. You know, it's just it's insane. It's hurting America if one of the two is the president next year in January, the new sworn-in president or the old sworn-in president. Biden is clearly too old. When you see him, how he aged the last 2 years, it's scary. Yeah. And he has one more full year to go, basically. In November are elections, and then he still has to run the country for 2-3 more months. And it's enough. It's enough, right? So, and also he's diminishing the chances of the Democratic Party to stay in power. And like, take Michelle Obama, whatever, George Clooney, Gary Newsom, a younger, more positive, who has a future, you know, who doesn't have to think, oh, I'm dead in 2 years. Who gives a shit what happens to the earth? You know, I mean, it's a difference if you're younger and you still have 30, 40 years to live, or you have 5 years to live if you're lucky. It's ridiculous. So I think the Democrats need to talk very serious to Joe Biden and say, look, we don't want to back you. You should call it a day. You were a longtime vice president under Obama. You had a long career. Now you had your big dream. You're the president of the United States. You did a good job, and you're done. I mean, that call has to get done by the Democratic Party. And, you know, it's exactly as Bill Mayer said with Rose Ginsburg, right, the Supreme Court judge. She was like taped to her chair till she was dead. And instead of stepping back during Obama was able to get a new judge on the bench. Trump got 3 judges on the bench in 4 years. Not one president ever, even presidents who were 8 years in power were able to do this. So, you know, it's so bad. And
here's a question. Besides the border issue, what else do you think? And like him being old, what else has Biden done that's bad? I think he's done some good things.
Yes, you know? No, and I think that he goes that he omits student debt is very good because it's so a ripoff to make people slaves for the rest of their lives to student loans. That he did that very good, right?
And of course, like everybody, like all the fucking recession and everything was caused during Trump and. Although Biden takes the blame for it, it is slowly like he stopped it going up. It like didn't go back down and it probably won't go back down. And I think that's his biggest problem is that people are so accustomed to how things were before COVID, all the prices of everything. They want it to go back to that, but I don't think it ever will. Like he says that he wants to like go after greedy airline carriers for overspending. I think he should go after like some of the food industry, but in reality, it's like a worldwide effect, like because of all these wars that are going on, because of all of our supply chains being altered, the price of food has gone up and it's not that much. Like all these companies want to make a profit. So like, I don't know. It's like his hands are kind of tied. He stopped the inflation, but people expect the unrealistic. I don't think that he can turn the prices backwards, you know?
No, I agree. But at the same time, I'm not with Biden how he handles the Ukraine situation.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not with my government here in Germany and Biden.
Well, you guys have a lot to lose with your gas situation. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, yes, and we are the last ones standing in Europe supporting Ukraine till our own death. What is a huge mistake. I just watched that doku 20 days in Mariupol, like about the first city the Russians took in the beginning of the war. It's Oscar nominated, this year Oscar nominated documentary, where they were basically filming for 20 days during Russia conquered the city. So it was very, yeah, a big, big, brutal drama, horrible, horrible a doku showing how brutally the Russian forces bombed the city, the private civilians got killed and stuff like this. That was the beginning of the war. And, but my conclusion out of this is not like, oh, the fucking Russians, now we need World War III and put them into their position. My conclusion is, it's nothing as exactly how you said it in the beginning of the podcast today. There is no value in fighting and killing and doing war at all. And if yeah. you are against a bad enemy like Putin, yes, he's the aggressor, he's the evil guy. But that doesn't help us. You know, it doesn't help me, you, or the Ukrainians, or the NATO, or the EU to go full on confrontational. Because the only thing what will happen is that it's an endless war with another 100, 200, 300,000 dead people in the end. A war Ukraine cannot win. We can give them money and weapons, but they are too weak. And we cannot get involved because then we have World War III and then huge nuclear arsenals will get fired at one point.
Speaking of which, did you hear about the Russian nukes in space?
Yeah, I read that today too, that they stationed them somewhere there or something, right? It's totally crazy.
Yeah, but there was like this national security thing yesterday, so.
Yes, I believe everything, but I watched also the Tucker Carlson Putin interview, and instead of completely disregarding it, I looked the full 2 hours because, I mean, it's very, very important to just hear what Putin says. Forget Tucker Carlson. He talks 15 minutes in 2 hours and Putin talks 105 minutes. So I think it's important to have your enemy and the guy saying what he wants, under what circumstances he would get a peace, whatever. And I think we are in a lose-lose situation because Russia will not, as I said from day one, lose a war against Ukraine. It will just not happen. They will win the war if Trump gets elected and dumps Ukraine. So now time is of the essence. And you cannot, as Scholz and Biden did, Scholz was just with Biden in the White House, the German chancellor, and both double down on we need to defeat Russia in the Ukraine in supporting Ukraine. But you can't. They will not win the war. You would have to send troops in to help them win the war. And do you want a direct military confrontation against Russia? I mean, sorry, but I'm not. Especially if you see a documentary like this, what that actually means when, like, a racket hits a house, in the house are people, now they're getting transported into hospital, you have little kids dying, ripped apart, people without legs. You ever want to come in that situation in your life? Not me. Not for any price. And I mean, any price means I would give up my home and leave and let the Russians have the south of Ukraine before I fight and die. Because all the leaders and the rich fuckers never fight and die. They're only giving the money and they order people going to the front lines to die. And I'm not one of them, sorry. I'm not a follower, you know, I'm not somebody who just follows orders or follows other people. I'm not dying for a country or a government at all, ever. Forget it. I'm out. So, and that is the thing. I think that mentality, especially in our countries, we have, like, a lot of people want individual freedom, individual peace, and they're not willing to die for anything, not for an idea or whatsoever. You know, the only situation where I would fight is somebody breaks into my house and wants to kill my family and me. Whatever, then I'm fighting.
Because you'd kick their ass, I'm sure.
Yeah, maybe. Who knows? But then, you know, like, but then I have no other choice. If somebody go in the supermarket and somebody randomly attacks me, I fight back. But the reality is, I'm not willing. If you can finish that war and stop the killing, and I'm 100% sure you can do it, right? Then you need to swallow the pill and let have Putin his part-time little win where he says, okay, I conquer 10-15% of the Ukraine terrain, like the where actually a lot of Russians live to, and I don't have like an arrest warrant on me anymore, and we start fresh. So very hard for Ukraine to swallow. Very hard for Ukraine to swallow. I totally agree, you know. But I think there is no other way. Germany needs the gas, but that is secondary. But of course, with the Russian gas, we German industry and German population, everybody would be better off. But that is secondary important. More important is to finish that stupid killing and the stupid war.
Yeah.
You know, like what is it? You know, you have everywhere situations where in the very end you have to compromise. It's like it's not always going only one-sided. And what we cannot forget is it's not the Houthi, it's not the Palestinian guy in Gaza, it's Russia. And there I have to 100% agree with everything Tucker Carlson said in the interviews after. He said, are we insane? They have the biggest nuclear arsenal. And you have Putin as the leader. He's not a little pussy, and he's also not senile. As we saw in the interview, that he's dead on and very sharp and is not falling apart and dying soon, as everybody said for years before, what was also total bullshit, you know? So, and that is the reality. It's like, if we really think we can fight against Russia and there will be no nuclear weapons falling in the end when Russia is actually leaving, not losing, and then we live in baloney land. You know, and that is the thing. It's like, there is no other option as to finish that war and do peace. There is no other option. Every other option is idiotic. It's idiotic. You know, and it's absurd.
Yeah, I think before, like a while ago, like before Zelensky was elected in the Ukraine, Russia had their people in control. Like Russia, it was basically like hush hush, like, you know, on the down low. Like even though there were Ukrainian, like, you know, diplomacy, it was really a Russian sympathetic ambassador who got most of their cues from Russia. And then that person got ousted, and then they had elections, and they had their own person elected, and Russia lost that influence and control. Russia got pissed, took over the Krim. And now we have this situation where if they do have peace, if they do, you know, come together and start to talk, one of Russia's demands, that whole denazification thing, is that basically to take out the command, take out the people in control, and put their own people in control. It'll be just like it was, or if not worse. But I think that they're trying to prove a point, you know, the Ukraine people, that they're independent and all this other stuff. They're ready to do till their death. But ultimately, that's what will happen if Putin got in there. You know what I mean?
But you have a tired out civil population. You have millions of Ukrainians spread all over Europe. They don't want to be in the war anymore. You have families torn apart. You have people getting killed every day. And you have a totally now, after 2 years, tired army, right? It's not that quick war. It's like more like the Vietnam War, where you get like basically tired out from the nonstop, like being under stress, being bombarded, fighting in the trenches. And
but Putin's Russians, freaking demands, Putin's demands, some of them are unrealistic. That denazification thing is very concerning. I know it's a part of his, like...
I don't know. I 100% agree with you that what Putin wants, he's not getting at all. That is 100%. But if you don't sit down, like he said in the interview with Tucker Carlson, that the Istanbul Peace Conference was almost getting to a point where both parties would sign the peace deal. So, I think that is the thing where we have to start negotiating. If you don't talk, you never come to terms, right? So, of course, you go in talks in and you say to Putin, you can keep the Krim, but the territories, we want to back all of them. You have to remove your troops, right? Then he said, no, because there are more Russians and they live now under our law and they're already integrated and we already have a border, blah, 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 blah. So then you start about all the other shit. What do you think about denazification? If we make a deal here that you keep that 10% of our territory, then there is a border and there is no further action in 90% of the Ukraine. So there is no denazification of Nazis that don't exist.
Yeah.
I mean, where are all the Nazis in from New Ukraine? Ukraine got overrun by the Nazis in Second World War. I don't know why they are so in favor of the Nazis. What made them being Nazis? I don't get it. Why
they it's fucked up. Putin calls people who are Jewish Nazis in this. I think isn't like, yeah, it's just like a blanket term in this case. It's not true. It's just to get a point across, like that these are the scum of the earth. I think that's the point he's trying to make. Because, yeah, you're right. There are no Nazis. It's bullshit. And it would be so nice if both sides could take some concessions and come together. But right now, both, not just Ukraine, but Putin, both of them want 100% absolution. You know what I mean? They're not willing to go 50-50. It would be nice, though. That would be a good tactic. You're right. They should talk. But each one has to fucking loosen up and you know, not expect absolute 100% victory. Like, there has to be concessions.
Yes, there have to be concessions from all things. And of course, we would, to make sure that border will not get moved anymore or destroyed, is, of course, then we would have to give a security guarantee to the Ukraine. If the Ukraine swallows the pill to accept the borders where they are right now, then there's only one way that that will work out, is that we say, okay, if Russia breaks that contract, if Russia has to sign it too, if they break the contract, move over that border, then we directly interfere into the war. So basically, we don't make them member of the NATO, but we give them a security guarantee that then they fight with us together, like then British, Italian, French, Germany, Poland, we all come to the rescue if Russia attacks again with troops, tanks, all the fighting power we have.
I think that if we do that, then that's World War III, you know?
No, but only if Putin breaks the deal.
Putin will never, he'll never take that. He'd never take that deal.
Look for it. Like, what is, if there is no deal, and Biden stays in power and he gets through Congress and the Senate, whatever, he gets support for Ukraine and the EU keeps supporting Ukraine. What will happen there? So what you tell me, what will happen then in 3 years, 4 years, 5 years?
I have
really seen that the Ukrainians throw the Russians out of the country and win, and the Russians move back to Moscow and say, fuck, it didn't work out by.
No, because I think that they'll be really exhausted after 4 or 5 years.
Yeah.
I hate to laugh about it, but, you know, it's like there are only so many people, you know.
Yes, they are only so many people. But the Russians, of course, moving people in and out.
It's endless. You are two months
fighting, then you go home. Then they bring other soldiers. So they wash out their troops, right? So it's like they have more people. And of course, they have also more people new coming in. And they also have now the Wagner soldiers, the mercenaries from the Wagner group. They are also fighting with the army again. I just don't see Ukraine winning. So if you see the documentary, the 20 days in Mariupol, then the question comes up, why you want to continue this? For what? I mean, the question not for Zelensky or Biden, but for the people of the Ukraine. You know, like if they say we're done, we're not fighting anymore, we're not trying to get that territories back, we just move away and build a border, put mines in the ground and have like defense going, but we're not trying to move in anymore, then we could have a kind of a ceasefire without a deal. That is the best what can happen there. You know, but would it not be better to have a deal? I mean, you know, would it be not better to have a peace deal and then open? What Putin says in interviews, he wanted to join the NATO. And Bill Clinton said no. He wanted to join the EU, but the EU said no. So the point is, why not? Why we can only take in democratic states? We took in Turkey. I mean, Erdogan is a dictator. Yeah. Right? He did the same fake elections as Putin in Russia.
But Turkey wasn't always that way, you know?
No, he was 20 years in power. He turned more and more into a dictator.
Yeah, now he is. It's all his fault, honestly, because before him, they'd had free, normal elections, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, you know, that is the thing. It's like, why we...
Yeah, no, I agree. I think Turkey sucks right now. So yes, I agree with that.
And it's always the threat that things totally escalate. You know?
Yeah. You know, they have to be open to discussion. That's the problem. Like, all this is, they're great points, and it could work in theory, but both sides are, like, so angry at each other that no one's listening. And do you really think Trump is the one that's going to suddenly make everyone get together? I highly doubt it. You know what I mean? This is such an unpredictable situation as to what's going to happen. Like, of course, you bring out the ultimate, you know, potential outcome, but it's really about the elections. The elections are going to determine a lot of stuff. So...
yeah, I mean, it's a lot of stuff, but I think Ukraine is a very important thing. And I want to give Trump one credit here. When he said he doesn't defend countries, they don't spend 2% in military spend, right? I agree with him. Sorry, but Germany never did that. This year's the first year Germany spent 2% for military because they're supporting Ukraine so much. And I think that is what Trump points out there is completely correct. It's a breach of contract. The US troops are protecting Europe, right? So, protecting whatever, NATO members. And without the US, the NATO would not even have 50% of the fighting power. If US is out, I would say the NATO lost 60% of their fighting power in total. So, and if the U.S. spends so much, we know why the U.S. spends so much military, because for all kinds of reasons and lobbyism and too many people making money on it. But the point is that if we don't fulfill the NATO contract, the U.S. has all reasons to say, okay, then you have two options. You pay us $100 billion or $200 billion for our services we do, or... you can fuck off. So, I mean, I totally agree there with Trump, and I'm a German, right? But I totally agree with Trump. I mean, it's kind of ridiculous how the NATO played the US all that years in underspending themselves and just being happy that the US spent so much money on weapons and military. Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting perspective, you know. I think that if that was to happen and like a country got attacked that didn't pay the 2%, that was a member of NATO, it would shatter the whole alliance. You know, I think that it would if America didn't, you know, fulfill its duty, it would make us look like we're fucking, you know, we're liars. You know, even if they broke the contract, it's like camaraderie, you know.
But as Trump, right? So if Trump always, he never sits down and explains things long. He always comes out with this, I fixed it in 24 hours, whatever, right? So, but what it would need is a new NATO contract, right? Where in a way, America has a benefit that if the European country is not spending the money, that they have to pay the US for protection. And why not? You know, so it can be not like always set in stone that deals cannot change. Look at the EU contracts. It's ridiculous. Like they didn't even have an exit clause. Nobody can exit. If you're a member of the EU, you cannot exit. It's impossible. The Britons did it. You saw 4 years of struggling with the stupid Brexit and a total shit show. So it's like, why the EU cannot make a new contract, under what circumstances you can join the EU, and under what circumstances you can leave the EU, and if, for example, if the EU, 80% of the countries in the EU vote you out, they can throw you out of the EU. Why is that not there? Well, if, I mean, you cannot have territories or EU members turning completely fascist and you still cannot throw them out. Because it's not, it's like just in the contract the way it is. And we don't have an exit clause, so we keep Adolf Hitler now in the EU because he just got voted in. I mean, what the fuck? You know, that doesn't make sense. It's idiotic. And there are a lot of contracts like this. And by the way, the Constitution of America, the Constitution of Germany, there are a lot of things that are extremely stupid. You know, there are like you can bear arms. It has to get out. You know, it's bullshit. It's not fitting into the 21st century. It's just like old fashioned bullshit written hundreds of years ago before the technical revolution came. So, I mean, of course, we have to look into everything, the law books and the constitutions and everything, and have to keep, of course, amount of freedom and peace and freedom of speech, freedom of the press. That is important. But we cannot keep all the paragraphs just because it's written at one point. It would be like everything in the Bible is true, what some idiots believe, but it's not, as we know, right? Naja.
Hmm.
Yeah.
These are very interesting ideas. I have to think about this. I don't have a reaction right now. That's
but
very
last,
interesting.
Last up before we finish for today. So you lost 20 pounds because you don't drink any alcohol anymore. What else you did? Only not drinking alcohol anymore, or what else?
You know, I've been eating a lot healthier. I had like social cocktails like at Disney World. Me and my fiance went out, but like generally I haven't had any alcohol at home at all in like 3 months. And I've lost like 20 pounds. I eat like yogurt and I drink kombucha and I just eat like a very European diet. Like I don't have a lot of sugar. I don't eat a lot of bread. And other than that, the alcohol, the sugars, the lack of all that seems to just cause, I guess my metabolism is fast still. So it's the weight is just coming right off. It's great.
That is good. I mean, you're totally right. I think I thought about it that I tried to reduce too. Natalie is drinking way less alcohol. And I try, for example, 3 days a week, no alcohol. And when I have alcohol, like maximum 2 glasses of wine or something. you know, like hard alcohol. I don't do any hard alcohol anymore for longer enough. In earlier years, I drank grappa or whatever, you know, stuff like this, but it's too much on my liver. Also, I feel it. I sleep bad. In general, if I don't have, if I don't drink alcohol, like today, I'm not drinking alcohol. I will sleep definitely 20% better as if I have any alcohol. Alcohol makes me sleep not so good. And but I like a glass of wine with a pasta or something, you know.
Yeah.
So were you drinking more beer, wine, or like whatever, gin tonic and cocktails? Or what was your typical alcohol consume?
It depends. Like, I would drink just about anything. Like, I would have beer or cocktails or shots of liquor, you know, hard liquor. Like, it depends on where I am, you know what I mean, in the situation. But, yeah, you know, what really made me kind of cut back, and I'm not, like, Mr. Super Alcoholic, like, drink every day, anything like that, but I started to read about people who had alcoholic brain damage, like all these testimonials online. There were some really, really like bizarre ones, really gruesome ones. Like, there was this woman, she had a glass of wine to start with her dinner every night, and then her drinking got more and more. She didn't even realize it, and she didn't say how much she was consuming, but I assume it was a lot, because she said her left eye got inverted, like it was like crossed, and she went to the doctor. The doctor, her doctor's an idiot, obviously, thought she was joking. And then she went to the eye doctor, to the optometrist, and that doctor said, go to the hospital because you won't live to see tomorrow if you don't. And it turned out that she was like an alcoholic and had like B vitamin deficiency, and it like causes, apparently B vitamin deficiency like causes holes in your brain to shrink. Some people get dementia. There was another story of somebody at 28 who would down like a bottle of vodka, bottles of vodka a day or something. And they ended up getting diagnosed with dementia at 28 years old. That's crazy.
Yeah.
So like, I don't know. I'm not against alcohol. It's totally in a social situation. It's fine. I'll get a little tipsy sometimes, like at my wedding, I probably will. But like, generally, I don't drink till I'm like smashed drunk anymore. I don't. Maybe it's my age, or maybe it's just I don't find satisfaction from it anymore like I did when I was young. But like, you know, I won't not drink ever. But reading all that makes you really think about like how you treat your body, what you're putting into your body. Like, I've been really concentrating on this a lot, and I think I'm probably going to lose a ton of weight. So let's see what happens. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. Then I would say for today, I don't know what to do. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. We talk soon, and read the press articles in Variety today. And soon I have more actors we can release names. And I'm very close to get some very good actors for my film. And I'm in the last negotiations of the money and all that stuff. So, but
yes,
it looks good. Okay.
So exciting.
Okay.
Yes.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So what happened?
Madam Web. I went to go see it, and you know, I haven't seen a Spider-Man film in at least a decade. I haven't seen any of the, what is his name? I still don't remember. Tom something. the guy who plays Spider-Man. I haven't seen any of his movies. Last one I saw was with Andrew Garfield, and it was absolutely terrible. It was bad enough that, like, it just felt rote and tired and stale and ultimately pointless. Just they were repeating the same, rebooting the same thing over and over again. And when they rebooted it yet another time, I had just had enough, and I didn't even bother to go see it. I remember walking out of Venom, which is from the same writer as Madame Web. I remember walking out on Venom probably about 25 minutes into the film. It was also very late, and I was tired, and it was stupid, so I just went home. But for this, I saw the very first show of Madame Web. Very first show, very first day. And I got my popcorn and my drink, and I got some candy because it's Valentine's Day, so I thought I would treat myself since my fiance is busy packing up to move here, my wonderful abode. But, the movie didn't really feel like a Spider-Man film. It felt more like a drama, and like, I wouldn't say it got off on a bad start. It's all about expectations and setting your expectations. And I think the trailers kind of let you to believe that there was Spidey action in this film that's just not there. It shows those three girls dressed up as Spider-Man characters kicking someone's ass. And it's part of the plot of this film, but it's also not really a part of the film at the same time. It's all in the commercial, of course, but in the film, it's like the hospital in the ambulance, one of those people, not a nurse, but that ambulance rider, freaking hospital worker. And Her mom's in Peru. Her mom's obsessed with spiders. She wants to find a special spider. Her partner double crosses her and like kills everyone and kills her and takes the spider and he disappears. And then you see like the spider people come out of the trees and like they're all like covered in mud and they look all like, you know, Aztec-y or something, and they grab her body, all the Spider-Man people who have superpowers, by the way, and they like put her in a like a pool of water, and she gives birth, and she gets bitten by a spider before she gives birth. One of their spiders to try and save her life. And of course she dies, but the baby is this girl who is the paramedic. There we go. The paramedic in, I think it's New York. It is New York. She starts to see things before they happen. Like, she thinks that like, she doesn't know what to think at first. She thinks people are just fucking with her or something, but she starts to like have like this recall thing where shit would happen, and she eventually starts to like change. She starts to change what happens, like the outcome. Like in one of them, like a pigeon like runs into her window and dies, and then she opens the window in reality and the pigeon lives and blah, blah, blah. But anyway, there's this dude, the guy who double-crossed her mom is, like, living in New York City, and he has, like, some kind of recollection, some kind of, like, he's predicting that he's going to get killed by these three spider women that he dreams of, and he, like, pays someone to, like, get their faces from his memory, from his dreams, and try and find them before, like at the age they are now, like before they sort of like the Terminator, like before they come after him. So he's like the Terminator, basically. He wants to find these girls, and he pays this woman who's hacked all the cameras in the city to like find these girls, and like it is a Terminator ripoff in a sense, because the girl, the Madame Web character, I can't even remember her fucking name, can see that like these girls are about to all get killed. She rushes them off the train. It's kind of funny that there's all this recall in the film. There's all this premonition
stuff because it kind of pads the runtime because you see the same scenes over and over. It's like that Nicolas Cage movie Next, right? But, you know, she tries to hide these girls out because the guy with the superpowers, for some reason, is dressed up in this like black Spider-Man outfit. It's really dumb. It's like totally not creative. But he's like kind of like more chunky or buffer than Spider-Man. So it looks like someone's dad dressed up in like a Halloween Spider-Man Venom suit or something. Like, but yeah, this guy's crawling on the walls. This guy's like fucking trying to kill them. And apparently, like, if he touches you, like, poison will come out and kill you or something. And if it touches you for too long, then you're dead. But blah, blah, blah. I don't know. Stuff happens. You know, I'm not even going to go into what happens, really. Just say stuff happens. Freaking Terminator ripoff, but with three young girls. And it's like very, it's made for like teens or tweens almost, you know. It's made for a younger demographic who might find it very gripping. It has the same intensity of like a 2000s X-Men film. I've heard people say online that it has massive 2000s superhero movie energy, and it does kind of, because it's I don't know. I don't think the movie knew what it wanted to be. Because then finally, like, the end just kind of just fucking... They really wrap it up really fast in a way that, like, is not very fulfilling. And I'm not too familiar with her character outside of, like, the Spider-Man animated series or some of the comics. But, you know, she has the final battle with this dude. And the three girls never turn into their spider fucking whatever the fuck he envisioned. And she goes blind, like, and I don't even know how, like, in the course of the fight, something makes her go blind. And then she's like this fucking female Professor X in a chair at the very end of the film. And she's like, and they're like, how you feeling? Like, the three girls are like her adopted daughters now or something retarded. And then she's like, I can see better than ever. Like, it's so corny. And, you know, suddenly she's blind out of nowhere. Everybody's cool with it. It's like they barely have her. She's blind in the movie for like 3 minutes. I don't even know, not even. And then the movie ends, and she's like, you see her like anticipating that these girls, they show all the footage they showed in the commercials here, where they're like, she's like, they're going to do great things. They're going to like stand up for themselves. They're going to, I anticipate all this. And like, they show the girls in these freaky spider outfits. They don't explain who the fuck they're supposed to be. They don't explain, like, this is apparently going to happen in a future film. It's like, so stupid. And then the movie ends. So it's like, I don't think this movie's going to do well enough for them to make whatever the fuck movie they're hinting at with the three spider teenage girls. And I hope they don't make it, to be perfectly honest with you. Although this movie was okay, you know, it was all right, but I wouldn't want to see another one like fucking Venom. How come there be a Venom 3 on the way? It doesn't make any sense. People, stop seeing everything that says Spider-Man on it, please. I saw a couple fucking 10, 20 minutes of that Spider-Verse shit. Fuck you, whoever told me to see that fucking movie. It's so fucking dumb. It's like the ethnic Spider-Man or something. It's just like the same old fucking story we've seen a million times, but with like this cultural swap. It's stupid. It's dumb. It's the same, and so is the white version of Spider-Man. It's stupid. It's dumb. I'm not the one to fucking see these movies. I mean, once upon a time, I liked some of them. But let's be honest here. It's a cash cow. This movie shouldn't exist. This Madam Web. This movie's stupid. It doesn't bring anything forward. It doesn't have a tie into Spider-Man at all, except that there's like Spider-Man that Spider-Man wannabe villain and dressed like Spider-Man, not even explained, and that there's spiders in the film, you know. But, you know, they plan to obviously do something with this, and I have not seen the mainline Spider-Man films, but I don't think that Venom has crossed over. None of that has crossed over. So these are all kind of like the standalone films. I don't know if they have the rights to have them appear on the screen with Spider-Man. I have no idea. But this movie out of 5, this is a hard one too. Because it wasn't absolutely terrible, but it was really dumb at the same time. But there is a demographic for it, and I'm just not that demographic, so I'll be kind. I'm going to give it 2 out of 5. That's being kind. I would have given it 1.5, but I wasn't bored, at least. But it could have been, I don't want to say it could have been a better film, because it really shouldn't have never been greenlit. It's like, the concept is really lame. So guys, wait. I mean, if you really want to see it, go. The theater had like 8 people in it. And, you know, it's easy to wait for streaming for this one. I would say it was better than Venom. But yeah, Amy Pascal, that's the producer. Amy Pascal, the one who produced the female Ghostbusters and this and other Spider-Man. She's in charge of the Spider-Man films, the whole franchise. So, okay, guys, tune in next time. I'm going to review, I still haven't seen Aquaman. If it's still out, maybe I'll go see it. But I'm not even sure what's coming. Dune Part 2 is coming. I will definitely see that. And, oh, wait, I have a ticket for, on March 1st, I have a ticket to go see Maestro with Bradley Cooper. Now, Uwe said Maestro was stupid and it was a high budget waste of time. So I want to see. You know, it's only playing one day, one time in my theater for some reason. So I'm going to go see Maestro. I'll do a review of it. Guys, I'll talk to you next time. Peace. Hello, this is Gary Otto. I went to the movies today to see a movie that I hadn't planned on going to see. And I barely even heard of it before today. I knew that it was like an Oscar nom or an awards nominated film. And it's that Emma Stone vehicle, Poor Things, that's supposed to be like a female Frankenstein, but it's so much more than that. Now, this is a really strange, it is a very bizarre film. Even the way that I feel about the film is kind of strange, because by all intents and purposes, the film is very gripping and well made. However, I don't know if I really liked the film. It's like, the gist of the film is that Willem Dafoe plays this like kind of like demented scientist who's like a teacher of, you know, carving up bodies or whatever, in like a, it's like a fictional alternate universe version of our own, because there's places like Paris, but in the story, but there's no real, it's not grounded in its visual presentation. It's like a painting or an art film, especially in the beginning. The movie doesn't show you how she was born immediately, the girl. The girl is like a Frankenstein's monster, where she is, she has the brain of her her baby in her head. Because the original woman died, and you don't really know too much about that until later, but you know, you see her kind of like acclimating to her environment, to like growing and learning at an accelerating rate. He hires one of his students to like take notes on her development, and like she eventually wants to, we'll just say she wants to get out. I mean, I'm not gonna list every single thing that happens, but she wants to, you know, see the world. And you know, as a scientist, she's like a creature of free will. He can't like deny her. So she like, originally they want her to stay there and lock her away and have her get married to like the assistant guy, the note taker guy, but she barely even like understands what marriage is. Like, she's still learning and growing, and she's like, you know, growing sexually, like putting objects in her vagina, and like, it's a very sexual film. I think what's hard, like, she meets what she experiences can be hard to see. She meets like the character, what's the fuck, that guy from Avengers, Mark Ruffalo, in a role that's pretty amazing. You usually don't see him in movies, and he plays like a scumbag, like a lawyer who's drafted up like the court documents or like the legal documents to kind of keep her legally facilitated to the house. And like, he is a kind of a scumbag, and he like sneaks up into her bedroom and like, I don't know, gets her to run away with him, and she fucks him in some hotel room. And like, you know, meanwhile, like, her, Willem Dafoe and like the student are really concerned about her, and she goes off and experiences the world and sees bad things too. And like, the her and the character have like a dysfunctional relationship, her and like the Avengers guy, Mark Ruffalo, and he's like a player kind of character, but the more that she doesn't want him, the more he wants her. And like, I don't know, stuff happens, and yada yada bing bong, they like get thrown off the boat in Paris, and she like, they have no money, or like, she steals his money and gives it away. It's kind of bizarre. So he has no money, and you know, he tells her that he needs money. So she goes and she sees like a somebody offers her to be a prostitute in like a brothel, and she like does it. She fucks one guy and she buys like some food. And then he is upset, Mark Ruffalo is upset, and she, like, she doesn't understand why. And, like, it's just really bizarre. It's a very bizarre movie. And, like, then it turns out that she had money the entire time, and she wants to send him on a boat to, like, somewhere else. And, like, it's just so, it's so very, it's kind of comical and fucked up, and there's a lot of humor. And you get to see Ruffalo's character kind of go mad the more that she kind of fucks with him. But she does become a prostitute. And, like, a huge portion of this movie, like, a whole act almost, is dedicated to, like, her fucking random strangers. Just, like, and then she has, like, you know, some of them are not attractive. And, like, you know, she allows herself to be corrupted with the help of her madam, who's kind of manipulating her to think that she's like bettering herself and like thinking that she has like a mental illness or something. But she like, she continues to fuck a million guys until like she becomes like kind of cut off emotionally, which it's that whole part of the film. It's like, it's hard to watch. She's been told it's empowerment by her madam, who just wants her to earn money and kind of like end up like her. Like an old, you know, used up, you know, bitter kind of person. And there's all these people around her who want her to end up kind of like damaged or hurt, and throughout the film, you know, damaged people. The movie is commentary on like how women are treated, on you know, perception and human condition, and it's rather thoughtful. However, hypersexualized, and like. She even fucks the black girl at the brothel, like the other whore there, and like it's so fucking ridiculous. Like she only goes home because Willem Dafoe's character is sick, he's dying, and she gets a message. They find her, she gets a message after some time, and she goes home, and he's made another one, who's like not developing as well. Because he isn't like emotionally attached to her or something like that. I don't know. But like she, yada yada, is about to, she's going to get married to the guy she was going to get married to, the handler. And this time she asks him. I think the movie has like these themes of choice. And even if she makes a bad decision, it's still her choice. And she's about to get married. And then it turns up that the Mark Ruffalo character finds the original husband of the woman whose body is being used. And he's there and he stops the wedding, and she realizes this person knows more about who she was, or her, you know, I guess it's her mother. But she figures out, they tell her everything about her being like Frankenstein. And she goes to this guy's, she allows herself to be taken away and goes to this guy's house to try and find out more about herself and her life. And she comes to the conclusion that she was like this horrible person, and like her husband is a horrible person. He's a very cruel, paranoid, vindictive person who has a gun with him at all times and gets things by force and treats people like garbage. And it's very interesting, like the themes of spousal abuse, and this is all in like a really strange kind of steampunk setting, by the way. It's just it was good. And then you know, I don't know, shit happens, the movie kind of ends on a dumb note, but you know, that's it was a pretty good film. It was not a film I don't think I would ever watch again, unless my fiance makes me watch it again, because she will probably want to see it and she'll probably love it, I bet you. You know, for a movie that I'm going to give 3 out of 5 stars, I don't agree with some of the choices that she made in the film, but I don't think that's the point. You know what I mean? It can be hard to watch because of that. Like, it's a very gray area of morality, of what is right and what is wrong. Like, things just kind of happen. And I guess that's, like, life. But, you know, the way that she allows herself to be used or abused or goes along with stupid people because she doesn't know any better, I guess these are themes that people experience every day. But the way this film frames them, like the fact that her brain is like a child's brain and she's like fucking all these dudes, like the implications of the film are kind of disturbing. But it was very well made. It's very colorful at times. And whenever they wanted to show something that was like holding her back, it was filmed very claustrophobic. It was filmed in like fisheye lenses. Parts of it were filmed in black and white. And suddenly it expands to color when her world expands, you know, her consciousness expands. But at times it goes back, like when she allows herself to go back to the woman's husband and yada yada, the camera goes back and forth to like perspectives. It's interesting based on like the emotional health of the situation, I suppose. But yeah, go see it, I guess, you know, or I don't know if it's a film that necessarily needs to be seen in a theater. It was fairly compelling, But I think that you could see it at home on a large TV and have the same experience. It was good, though. You know, it's probably not going to be in the theater for much longer. I think this is the last week my theater's having it, which is why I went to go see it. So, yeah, check it out if you can. And, you know, next time, I'm supposed to go see Aquaman 2 tomorrow. So, let's see. I don't have very high hopes. I never had high hopes. I heard the film was terrible a very long time ago from people who had actually seen the film. And a lot of people can't talk about that shit so far in advance. They sign these NDAs. But they can say enough that I know it's going to be bad. It's probably a very overproduced mess. It sounds like there's not a lot of plot there. Or a convoluted plot, possibly. But I've stayed away from a lot of the material for that film. Sans the trailer. I did see the trailer. The theatrical trailer. But, you know, let's see. Until next time, guys. Peace. Wonka. So like a couple years back, I read this article about like how Amazon had spent a whole shitload of money. I think they spent like 200 million, maybe even more, on the Roald Dahl, like Willy Wonka rights for like a Willy Wonka shared universe, like multiple films. And then Timothy Chalamet, whatever, signed on. And I'm sure we're going to see plenty more of these Willy Wonka films. You know, it was a musical. It was for families. It had very slight adult-leaning humor, but not really. Like, it was something that everybody could enjoy or get something from. Do you know what I mean? Like how adults can get jokes that children can't, etc. So it was nothing risque or raunchy about it. It was rated PG. And, you know, it's supposed to be like a prequel to the Willy Wonka, like Charlie and the Chocolate Factory with fucking the guy from See No Evil, Hear No Evil. What's his name? Not Richard Pryor. Fucking, I can't even remember his name. Funny About Love. Gene Wilder. There we go. It's kind of weird that it took Funny About Love, the movie directed by Leonard Nimoy, for me to remember him. But he's been dead for a while. So this is supposed to be a prequel to that. And, you know, in that original Charlie and the Chocolate Factory film, you know, there was the real world that Charlie was in. It was, of course, like a movie-ized version of the real world. But the real world was like a harsh reality. And the only snippets of joy were like the candy shops. But Charlie's life was pretty grim. And, like, life wasn't great. In this film, it depicts everything as magical. Like in that original film, like the magical stuff happened when he was inside the chocolate factory. It changed the tone of the film. Like the movie opened up. This one, everybody's like fucking, it's sort of like Harry Potter meets, Mary Poppins, because like from the start, everything's quirky and like it's like Matilda-y or something. I can't quite explain it. If I had made the film, I would have made the real world like harsh and punishing, and Wonka is like the only bright light in this like horrifying world. But of course, this is a kids' movie, so. So everybody's just kind of like immediately at the very start of the film, Wonka has like magical chocolate. They don't explain how he like the chocolate can fucking float in the air, and like people are floating when they eat it. And like Slugworth, who is now black, and the actor does a great job, by the way. I didn't know it was Slugworth at first. I don't know, like the original depicted Slugworth as like fucking scary, like like he was actually kind of scary for a child. Like he was like a Nazi or something in the fucking original. And now like he's kind of like charismatic and like and proper and like stuck up, and it's very toned down from the harsh elements, like the hard elements of the original. Especially at the very end when he's like finally starts creating his chocolate factory, which it the way it happens makes no sense. And everything in the film, it's weird. Like all the sets, every time that, you know, something happens, like he gets his shop done or like the chocolate factory, it all looks like something from a theme park. It looks like Universal Studios. Even the streets that they walk in, like it looks like a big set. It's very dressy. And it was good, but it didn't seem real. It felt very Harry Potter-y, like they're trying to get you prompted for like the Willy Wonka land at Universal Studios or something, which I wouldn't be surprised if they did, but at Epic Universe. But yeah, you know, Willy Wonka fucking, like, at the beginning of the film wants to, like, get a room somewhere, and, like, they make him sign a contract and has all this fine print that he doesn't read, and they, like, enslave him because he owes them, like, $10,000 or something ridiculous, and he meets all these other, like, slaves who, like, do laundry in the basement. Like, are entrapped, and if they try to escape, like, they call the police and bring them back because they have contract and blah, blah, blah. So, like, he's hanging out there. He sneaks out to, like, sell chocolate and, like, works his way up. People love his chocolate, but Slugworth and the other two fucking idiots, like, they want him to, like, they love his chocolate, but they want him, like, taken away. And, like, Wonka uses bizarre, like, additives, like, giraffes, like, milk and, like, fucking, like, sweaty ball sack hairs or something, and, like, fucking, I have no idea, but like it makes people do like wacky shit, like people can float in the air. One of them makes people grow hair and shit, and like everybody's growing, who's bald is growing hair, and like they all love it. Everybody loves this chocolate. You know, I wouldn't say there was too much plot in the film. It's a very basic plot. But it was pretty involving. Keegan-Michael Key plays this, like, cop who's dirty, who's, like, being bribed with all these chocolates to the point that, like, every time you see him, he's, like, fatter and fatter until he can't, like, get out of the car. It's, like, it's pretty ridiculous. It's funny, though. It's cute. It's a good family film. And Timothy Chalamet, you know, I don't approve of the fact that he's dating a Kardashian. I feel bad. I feel like there was some Kardashian stench all over this film. But he did a good job. He didn't have a great voice, but it worked for the film. He was very zany in his own way. Sort of like a modern day Ed Grimley or something. They should have Timothy Chalamet play Ed Grimley. That would be great. But anyway, yeah, you know, as far, I didn't really give that much away. I just gave the general plot away. So you should go see it if it's still out. I think it's already on streaming. Today was the last day the theater had it. So I thought I'd just go see it before they pulled it. Oh, fuck. This one's hard. I usually go on a 5-star system here. And you know, a movie has to be exceptional for me to give it a 4. I don't think that this movie goes beyond a 3. I'm really strict about this. Like, I'm normally a 2.5 out of 5 guy, but this was cute. It was good for what it was in its genre. And even if it was like kind of the harshness of the original series was subdued, it was charming. I don't know where they're going to take it. I can't imagine like a million of these films, but it's been primed, you can tell, to make merchandise and chocolate and, you know, now Willy Wonka's in this steampunk world or something. Like, I don't know, but it's, I guess this is the way they get people reinterested in the property. Because it was screaming Harry Potter at times, you know. It was like Harry Potter with chocolate. Instead of, well, I guess there was magic, wasn't there? But they didn't explain fucking any of it. Like the Harry ball sack shit, the fucking, whatever the fuck he puts in the chocolate. Like, where does he find a giant or whatever, the whoever the fuck, whatever was he put in there? Like, he makes friends with the giraffe throughout the film, so I don't know, whatever, dude. But yep, next time, tomorrow, I have tickets to go see Madame Web. Oh my God, so just wish me luck. I know it's gonna be bad. I haven't seen a Spider-Man film since Amazing Spider-Man 2. It's been a long time. I haven't seen any. I saw The Avengers, whatever the fuck, that had Spider-Man in it. But I haven't seen any of the standalone Fart From Home or whatever the fuck. Like, it's time to go home. All of them say home in it. I don't know what they're called, but there's like a million of them. Tom, whatever his name is, the guy from Uncharted, Tom Hiddleston, no, Tom Hardy, no, Tom, he's a Tom. But anyway, yeah, so tomorrow is Madame Web. I have the Regal Unlimited, so I just said I'm going to bite the bullet. It might make a funny review. It's like that female Spider-Man, basically, or like Madame Web in like the comics or the Spider-Man cartoon show, if I remember correctly, just kind of shows up and gives him like something to solve, or like a scavenger hunt or something. That she goes, she doesn't really have a personality. So yeah, this is, I blame it on the fuck, that chick who produced, like, she's now in charge of all the Spider-Man, the one who produced the female Ghostbusters movie. She used to be an executive at Sony, and then she became a producer, and she, I think she came on too strong at first with the female Ghostbusters one, but she's learned how to, like, kind of tread very lightly. But look at Madame Web. I mean, it only exists because of this woman. It's not Kathleen Kennedy, it's, I can't even fucking remember her name. But she was in that controversy with the Sony email leak. A lot of emails from her, like, calling Angelina Jolie spoiled and, like, I forgot what the fuck else. But see you next time, guys. Peace.